Hello, everybody. How y'all doing today? We're back, and we have a special guest today. Someone who reached out to me. We talked, had a meeting the other day. We really clicked, and I think Michael Pereira. Hopefully, I didn't butcher your name too badly. He has an experience with autism, and that can be a difficult thing for a lot of families. And I've worked with people in that community before. I've worked with autistic children in the classroom a lot of times while teaching and also doing therapy. And it can be a really challenging process. I know one of the things that I work with families on, but I'm not an expert like Michael here, is on what should the family do to support the person who has autism, and what are the expectations? I know that's always an issue, conversation. So, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
No, Christopher, thank you so much for having me. Very excited. But thank you.
So, what was your journey like with autism and having an autistic child and interacting with autism, expectations wise, what was your initial journey like, and how did you make progress with that?
Of course. So, for those who are listening, I'm the founder of the Autism Voyage, and everything started when my son was diagnosed with autism several years ago. But everything I would say, my journey started also finding myself within this new curveball, right? Because my wife and myself, we were in denial when, even though he was diagnosed like 4 years ago, we knew way before that he had something, but us as parents, first time parents, we went through our own denial phase. And I would say that not only denial that we, it touched on the ego side from my side. It touched on, several areas that we didn't want to see. But at the same time, I would say, just as a side note, for those people who are in the same boat, look out who you're watching, listening to. Because in our case, we had family that would say, "Hey, don't worry, you were the same, just give it time." And that's for me now that I see it from a couple years after, is that that is dangerous, right? Because that can procrastinate any early intervention. And I think that any diagnosis should be caught as early as possible. So if you have family and or friends, and they're telling you not to do anything, and they may not have experience, but they do have love and intent, just go to a professional, right? At the end of the day, I would say that. So that happened to us. And long story short, Christopher, I don't want to overwhelm anybody, but long story short, we went through our own denial phase. Around that time, we started looking for our own, I would say, resources. So started looking for blogs. All the blogs we saw at that time were very old or more academic based, like researched, and started looking for our own financial planner, advisor. Every time we met with somebody, it was more that they wanted to sell us something or recruit us. And there really wasn't a conversation around planning, right? Because obviously you do not know when your son or daughter might be independent, right? So, long story short, we created our own blog. We crossed over 100 articles. We have our own newsletter. We just crossed over 2,000 families subscribed. We have our own directory of coaches and professionals and businesses that just add value to the community. And we have our own insurance planning practice to help families like ours.
That's amazing. I'll say this, just from the clinical piece, and I've been an educator, there are very, very, very few resources for families with autism. You're really the first that I've heard of. And I'm thinking I'm gonna refer you to some people to you that I know who might need your services, because these are the things that that people don't think about.
No. And maybe they do, but they believe that they have time.
Could you explore that piece a little bit?
Of course. So, I see a couple of common mistakes that, and I did it as well, is that thinking that you have time to plan. And that procrastination at the end of the day, from my perspective, has a lot of consequence. From a financial point of view, when you don't plan and you procrastinate, everything gets more expensive, right? From an insurance planning perspective, the longer you wait, the older you get, the probability of you qualifying for anything gets difficult, more difficult. And just in general, just what you know, but if you don't get that curiosity, skill, I would call it skill, being curious and start having conversations so you do understand what you should and what you should not do. I think it's very important. Sometimes I see a lot of families come into this approach of, oh, I'll do it myself then, and it seems sometimes like they're on cruise control, but they're going the wrong way. Because they're doing everything online, they're doing their own trust, they're doing their own life policies, and they're buying, but they're not considering a lot of stuff, and they end up paying more money later on down the road to just solve whatever issue they caused, right? Because they didn't want to talk to a professional. That's where I say, at the end of the day, it's about having conversations. Conversations doesn't mean that you need to commit to anything. But conversations will help you gain clarity as of what to do next, right?
I like that. Talk to a professional, get clarity. As most difficult as that sounds to do, it's prudent, it sounds like, because you don't want to wait. I think from what I've seen with clients and their families in particular who have autism, there's an issue with my child's going to get better.
I think every parent says that, right? Even me.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. At the end of the day, I hope Christian, my son, who's 7 now, by 18, he may be able to make a decision by himself, but I don't know. And that's why I need to plan, right? Because he may be independent, and that's what we're doing. We're consistent with therapy, and we're being a what we would call being a support system, but I don't know. I don't know. He may be independent when he's at 18, 40, or, our main thing right now is to be able to plan, to be able to make sure that we're planning for different type of scenarios, be consistent, involving his sister Amanda, so she can feel included as well in the family dynamic. And but we got to be proactive, and we got to involve everybody, but at the same time, that activity is being proactive and being curious of what's out there, what's not. And if you believe that your child might be independent, perfect. Me too, I think he will, but I don't know. That's the reality of it.
Talking about realities, that can be hard for a parent to conceive, to perceive. What might my expectations be as a parent for my child who has autism? How does a parent go about understanding these edges? I'm going to use a clinical term, these edges for their child.
Even though I'm coming here into this episode with you, it took me a long time as well to get to accept the terms in which we live in, right? And so when I talk to you and the audience, it's not that, it's easy. It's not easy, right? And it's not easy to comprehend everything that's happening. But also at the same time, I would say after a while of this, I would say that the denial that I carry just spoke of how selfish I was,
Oh my.
because I was only thinking about how this situation affected me. And the more I think about, oh, I thought this, or I planned this, or why me? I'm just losing focus. I was losing focus on Christian, right? So I would say just make sure that if you are, it's hard to understand and to grasp, but make sure you're listening it with the right approach and not putting yourself in front of the benefit of the child. Because if you're only thinking about the way you feel, again, there, I don't think there's much benefit there. And I can tell you this now after several years, but I was in the same boat.
Yeah, that thinking the way of the way you feel juxtaposed to what's best for my child. How do parents talk about this? How do they broach this, the way you feel and the focus piece and the selfishness? How does a parent broach that with with a secondary parent?
Okay.
How does that work?
It's just, you know, there's a saying in sales when I was in corporate that would say, hey, it's not your fault, but it's your problem. And in our case, it's not our fault, it's our responsibility. It's not our fault Christian has autism, but it's our responsibility. So when you think about it that way, it doesn't matter the way I feel. It doesn't matter our family dynamic, what Ellie, my wife, thinks, or what I think. It is still our responsibility to make sure that the family is in a good place. And I think that that is understanding that and seeing it that way helped us, you know, just come into terms and say, okay, right, you know, whatever I felt, leave it, you know, okay, I understand it, leave the ego behind, leave what I thought, my selfishness right now. What can I do to be able to not only serve Christian in his capacity, but also what can I do to serve Amanda so she doesn't feel left out? What can I do for my wife that she's stressed out and I can help her out, and vice versa, and have that communication throughout the household, you know, so everybody can feel heard. But at the end of the day, it's more on the acceptance that regardless however you feel or think, this is your responsibility.
I like these two pieces, Michael, that you said, serve and communication. Those are really, really important in any kind of relationship. In particular, with healthcare and other parts that you know, with expectations and things, what's that going to look like? And then, you know, I was telling somebody just the other day that culturally in the United States, we have a deficit because we're taught, well, you know, let me just make it, I was taught that, you know, you stand on your own 2 feet and you know, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all of that kind of American lingo. And you know, spread your problems in the street, you keep your business to yourself, you know, this kind of stuff. And so what happens is we have this very individualistic, isolative type of presentation to the world. And the sad thing is, we don't reach out for help. We don't reach out for community. When you look at other societies, just across the world, other native societies, be it Native American, be it any tribal cultures across the world, they operate exactly the opposite. They work in concert with each other in union. There's a synergy going on where they work together, where there's nobody is going to be by themselves. The whole village, that was that adage, it takes a village to raise a child. And I'll say any child, right? And so you know, but they carry the emotional, psychological piece is that these villages, and this is a study that they did, I learned this a long time ago, that these families, these communities tend to work better together, and they become more resilient because when trauma happens to them, whatever that be, something life-threatening or health-wise or whatever it is, they work together. And the study shows that those people are become far more resilient than, say, somebody's trying to do it all by themselves. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And we see it from our side. You know, at the end of the day, it's you. And even more, you know, having a child that requires care. And even though for us, Christian is high functioning, but regardless, the amount of effort that goes on to just raising a family that includes a child that may require unique, you know, support is tough. And you need to also create your own support system, right? Your own circle. And for us, after Christian was diagnosed, our circle became smaller, but I would say better because it was around the people that understood. We were open, you know, we are always open for feedback. But at the same time, you know, with people that we can grow alongside them and vice versa. So it's about creating that support system that you know that will help you along the way and you help them, right? But it's on you to, at least for us, it was on us to create it. So there is a lot of people, even family, that we just, you know, distance ourselves because we knew that, you know, at some point we need to make sure that it's an environment that we believe it's safe. It's an environment that we believe it's that. And that's the way we approach it. You know, and it took time. And again, I'm here talking to you, which I have a lot of gratitude, but at the same time, I need to mention that it took me a long time to think this way, right?
Yeah. What was the thing that moved you to think this way opposed to the way that you used to think?
Yeah, there's not one specific thing. I think along the way, you know, it's just learning how to adapt, learning how to understand that. You know, it's a different way of raising the way versus the way I was raised. My wife was raised is being adaptable, being understanding that, you know, I would say not only being adaptable, but also, again, the word curious. I need to become more curious around Christian's school. Start asking teachers, hey, how did he do? How, you know, ask more questions, get involved in
Good.
the life of the child.
That's good.
Because, you know, that for us, so it wasn't one specific thing. I think it was a lot of factors that just weighed in, and we were just, you know, getting used to our new reality, I would say.
That's good. I know that. I'm thinking back now on there's some clients that I used to have who were high functioning. One particular case, I definitely remember experienced individual experienced a lot of anger. Although able to work independently, had a job, there were still some stuck points that I recall. Them working through, which that was a big part of our therapy, was to work through those stuck points, the anger, and that was interesting. Have you experienced anything like that with your child?
No, you know, Christian's 7, you know, he still, I don't think, comprehends that, you know, even his current state right now. He's still, you talk to him and you say, hey, how are you? He's gonna say Kung Fu Panda. He's still, you know, he's still learning a lot of stuff, a lot of
That's
stuff.
cute.
Yeah. So he's not in that, you know. His meltdowns and tantrums have been more from a sensory standpoint. So if he hears the kitchen blender, you know, he's gonna have before, not now, but Or he would have a meltdown. Or for example, we would go out to a public, they say the public bathroom that has the blow dryer to dry your hands. It became, from a sensory perspective, meltdowns. We were years without going out to a restaurant because of that same thing. So it's more that type of meltdown than just anger itself. I don't think I've been out. We here at home have experienced that. But it's more on the meltdowns have been caused by more of a sensory thing.
I know that, at school we had to, and this is over, I've worked at schools in Texas and in Virginia, and in both places with our autistic population, the sensory thing was very big deal. Sometimes it's the lighting, sometimes it's the fire alarm would be a huge thing. At schools, they have to have you test these fire alarms. So that was always huge. We would use noise canceling headphones, excuse me, for that. And oh, by the way, the principal has to let has to let us know before the fire drill so we can get those kids out of the building first before the alarms went off.
Before, yeah, it
And
happened.
even then, it was an issue. It's just like, so that sensory piece is interesting. How did you discover what things, bothered him yourself more than other things? Was a process for that, or?
No, I don't think there's a process. There's two things. Well, I would say it's one is that, it also makes me think if I had something before, because a lot of the behaviors he has, sometimes I have it, right? So that's going back to your question, about adapting where I said adapting. Also, I think throughout that period that I said there's nothing specific, but now remembering along the way, I would see that there was a lot of behaviors that going back on the music on Spotify, hit repeat like 15 times to the same song, or I have those same behaviors. And maybe along the way, when I notice, hey, maybe that also made me more patient as well, because now I identify with him in some areas. So yeah. That would be my thing, but yeah, it's been a journey. It's been a journey, and in regards to what you mentioned about the sensory in the school, I've seen it. I've seen it, and it's tough. But what I can say is that what I've been able to develop, and maybe not to 100%, but if you're able to identify what your child is saying without him saying it,
Oh my.
I think it's that's a win-win. Because at one point Christian was nonverbal or saying a couple words, and it came to a point that we were able to say, hey, you know what, he's frustrated, or hey, he wants this, or if you're that type of father that or mother that really gets involved, and you're able to basically identify what your child's trying to say with his behaviors. Oh, that's extremely helpful for the child.
That's, I think you just hit on something pretty significant. Say what is your child saying without saying it? And the behaviors piece. I think just from my experience working with children with autism, and I think that's a key point with the behaviors, because a child or an adult with autism, they're unable to verbalize like you and I necessarily. So what happens is, something might happen on Friday that might cause the child to be upset or the adult to be upset, and they may not be able to respond until Monday. And so you'll find the behaviors on Monday, and you'll be lost about, man, what happened to Philip? like, or Sally or whatever, and it be, like in a fog. So now you're becoming the detective, to try to figure out what happened before this behavior. And a lot of times you'll have to go looking for it, but once you find it, you oh, that's what it was, right? Have you experienced that at all?
Yeah, not, again, I could have, but he's too young in some
Yeah,
cases.
he's, yeah.
Yeah, so not necessarily, but I do understand 100% talking to other families and that, so it does make sense, but for my case, not that much.
Not much, yeah. Yeah. And of course, puberty, I understand it creates its own little dilemma. And I know that certain people, just from being a session with them, particularly high functioning folks with autism, have to come up with their own solutions really to regulate emotionally.
Yeah.
To what do we say, prevent meltdowns to get in front of it, because once it starts, it starts.
Starts. It starts. Yeah, and school started, and this is just a story I want to share. School started like a month ago, I would say. And man, Christian had a very, very big episode the day before. New school, new therapist, new classmates, new teacher, and that Sunday it was tough. And the thing is, it's very hard to be a functioning parent while you're being while exhausted. And I would say that, it's just tough to be able to come into terms that with your child's states, because they grow out of behaviors, but at the same time they grow out of ones, they incorporating new ones.
Yes.
And in our case, that Sunday was tough. It was a two like a like an hour and a half, 2 hour meltdown.
Oh my.
And it was tough. And he again, he's only 7, a lot of crying, screaming, and all that. But the thing is that he stopped the 2 hours, but my wife and myself, we were without sleeping for days
Oh.
because we were so worried, right? We said, okay, is he going to be able to get along with the classmates? Are the teachers going to be as patient as us? And sometimes we focus a lot on the children, but I also want to make sure that I also share that as a parent, we should also take care of ourselves,
Good.
because that self-care aspect is very important.
Yes.
If we can get a carried away talking about everything we can about our children, being present, embracing the moment, getting to know them, but don't lose focus on yourself.
I like that. That's always a good thing, to be present and focused on yourself, the self-care. What did we used to say in the doing law enforcement? You can't save anybody else until you save yourself first,
100%. 100%.
and that's so real. I'm reminded, if I may, there's a in an educational setting, there's this guy that one of his triggers was, he had to have everything perfect. We had these point sheets, these behavioral point sheets, kind of like Boys Town type of thing. And if he didn't get a perfect score at the end of the day, Johnny was going to have a meltdown. And Johnny was as big as me. One day, somebody gave this guy, we would always take the point sheet and fold it in half and staple it so he wouldn't look at it. And we'd be like, all right, Johnny, get on the bus, take this home to your parents. And this one particular day, some teacher didn't staple it. Oh my God. And there was this, we called it a quiet room. That was interesting because it really wasn't a quiet room. And it was right next to the bus ramp where you walk down and get on the bus, and the bus is waiting. And they gave him that point sheet, and Johnny looked at that point sheet. His name really isn't Johnny, but he looked at that point sheet, and this guy put himself in the quiet room, took his shoes off, fell on the floor, and yelled and screamed and kicked and cried like a baby. That was very hard to get him to get himself together enough to get on that bus. That was a job. It was a big job. It wasn't funny, but it was like, God, this guy's 250 pounds. He's screaming. Oh, he looked like a 4-year-old, but he knew enough. That was his coping mechanism, though.
It's
He
tough.
knew enough to say, I need to go in the quiet room. And he went straight in there, had his little meltdown. And I don't think it lasts more than 15 minutes.
That's tough. No, and each child is different, right? Each family is different, and each child manages or reacts differently on those type of topics, so I completely understand that it's tough, but at least he was able to himself, put himself, from what I understand, into that 15-minute breakdown. But it's tough. It's tough. And now our thing, what we're trying to do, is give him activity. So we put him at one point in jujitsu. We walk with him. We show him, that maybe exercise is a way of him releasing that type of energy that he has, give him activity as much as possible. We reduce the screen time a lot. We reduce the TV time a lot, just to give him that activity, because sometimes when we see that he's going to be having a meltdown, let's go walk, let's breathe. And
Good.
that's helped us a lot.
That's good. And those types of measures do help. A lot of times, from what I understand, people don't they have a hard time figuring out what to do. And I think that's with anybody though. Anybody. It's like, how do I keep myself? I have meltdowns. How do I keep myself from having a meltdown? It happens.
100%.
Sometimes, honestly, Michael, it just might have to happen. I don't know. Sometimes it might have to happen.
I mean, to know it, the other day I saw that, I don't know where, if it was in social media or not, but I said, like, hey, a grown-up's meltdown is like a panic attack, right? And sometimes you need to have it, sometimes you don't. At the end of the day, I'm more on the always self-care. At the end of the day, if you're getting to a point that you're going to have a panic attack every other month, just try to do something that can help you, and that's where you start identifying yourself really well, right? There's a lot of things that I've been able to get to know myself after Christian's diagnosis.
Oh, wow.
Even our marriage, right? It working as a team now. We do not fight because I left the toilet seat up. We don't do that here. We don't fight about that. We don't argue about that because there's more important things, right? And I think that this situation that just came about, that for us is a blessing, has helped us also, make sure that whatever argument, discussion, or conversation we're having, it's more if it, it there has to be a beneficial outcome out of it, not just fight to fight, or because I didn't sleep, now I'm grumpy. No, this doesn't happen here.
So if you could identify three things that might have come out of this scenario that that are blessing to your marriage, what would they be?
Being able to first, I'm a faith man, putting everything in God's hands, and I would say my relationship with God is as close as it can be because of this situation. Because now I rely 100% on Him, not on me. And that would be the first one. Second one I would be it would be to, you know, have before I wouldn't have conversations with a true meaning behind them, in the sense that if I would have a conversation because I'm buying something, it was just straightforward. I wasn't a person that I would develop relationships or I would nurture relationships, you know. So this situation has helped me nurture very good relationships with like-minded parents, and that understanding that there is a community out there that, you know, are going through the same thing. So that by itself has led me to understand that I'm not alone, or my wife. And I would say the third one, you know, it gave me this opportunity to be able to help other families like ours, that at one point we were very confused, very frustrated, because again, like I mentioned before, everybody just wanted to sell us something or recruit us, and nobody really talked to us about just having a conversation around how would our future possibly look like from a financial point of view. And being now able to do that for families, you know, everything came about because of the situation. So I would say those are my main three things.
That's amazing. You know, I think, Michael, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm excited about our listeners connecting with you, and just the knowledge that you bring in the shorter period of time, I think is invaluable, and people need to know and hear what processes that you have worked with and what works. I think this podcast goes a long way for sharing that. And I'm particularly interested in that finance piece and how to do the planning. And I love what you said about the selfishness to take yourself out, what's best for the child. And that's a hard conversation for people because, you know, it's always the shame and the blame and all of this other kind of thing. Even though you may not say it, it could be there resting somewhere inside of your subconscious mind. And so it's one of those things that we just have to say, you know, this is what's going on. Let's do something about it. I like what you said about the procrastination piece. Everything was really good. Man, excellent. How can we get in touch? How can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
Of course. So the website is www.theautismvoice.com. There you're going to see blogs. We just, like I mentioned before, we just crossed over 100 blog posts. We have there you're going to see the newsletter. You're going to see about us section. If you want to see a picture of my family, Christian and Amanda, and my wife is there, myself. Don't get scared. The picture, I had more hair before now, but that website, you're going to be able to find everything there, resources. And if you want to talk about your finances, you can also just click on speak to a professional. You can coordinate a call with me or my team.
Nice. Michael, this has been a pleasure. I
Likewise.
really enjoyed this conversation, and God bless you and keep you and your wonderful family.
Likewise, likewise. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You take care.